from Wondery. I'm Mark Ramsey, and this is People Like Us. Part 2, the final chapter. Fall 2018. Sue Kaler sits alone in a chair, admiring the trees dappled with the bright colors of fall. This is her backyard in Northeast Philadelphia. She has a new puppy, a miniature Pomeranian, an animal that loves her without judgment, without reservation. Sue is studying to be a certified medical assistant. She has seen firsthand the difference you can make when someone's sick and they need help. Today, her health is good. She takes 4 pills a day to keep the virus in check, but back in 1992, her prognosis was terminal. She was emaciated and sick. She was HIV positive. Sue was one of the many people living with HIV/AIDS who were undergoing treatment in a pivotal scene at a clinic with Tom Hanks' character, Andrew Beckett. Sue spent the day sitting with Tom Hanks. It was a busy shooting schedule, and some time had passed since any food had been available. Sue remembers feeling faint, not well at all. "Jonathan, Sue Kaler hasn't eaten. We need to stop and let's eat now." That was Tom Hanks. After lunch, Sue sat alone with Tom. She told him about the book she planned to write, the book about living with HIV. Tom Hanks took her hand and said, "Sue, when you get that book done, and when it becomes a movie, if you need somebody to be in it, I'll be in your movie." That was Tom Hanks. That was always Tom Hanks. How did Sue survive when so many others did not? It was faith, she says today. Faith was everything to her. She believed that God would help her, and with the help of those 4 pills a day, he did.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company. Unconventional ideas that change the world. Whatever business means to you, listen to top podcasts like How I Built This and Business Wars early and ad-free only on Wondery Plus. Wondery means business.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear, it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Before her appearance in Philadelphia, Sue was working at a bank branch in town. Her desk and the one next to it. Coming. Sir, I have a request to make.
Sure, what is it?
Well, for some time now, I've been working at the desk next to Sue Kaler's desk. Yeah? I didn't know she had AIDS. She doesn't have AIDS. She's HIV positive. But I don't want to get AIDS. You know, you can't get HIV or AIDS by sitting next to Sue Kaler. Can I move to a different desk, please? Well, if you make that request, I'm obliged to honor it, so go ahead and move. Outside his window, the bank manager watched. He watched as the man lifted a cardboard box to his desk. He watched as he loaded that box with pens and paper and photos and personal items. He watched as the man moved that box to another desk in another corner of the bank branch. Everyone watched. From her lonely desk, Sue Kaler watched. And not for the first time that day, she began to cry. AIDS is a wasting disease. In order to simulate that wasting away, Tom Hanks would need to lose weight, a lot of weight, almost 30 pounds of weight. He did it safely with the help of a trainer and nutritionist, an intense daily workout regimen, and an equally intense diet. 12 Cheerios for breakfast, a box of lettuce with a few almonds for lunch. His daily intake? 1,400 calories, about half of what most men need. In the courtroom scenes, Tom spent much of the time sitting beside Denzel Washington at the counsel table. There were long breaks between takes. Denzel watched Tom eat his box of greens and shook his head. He reached down to the drawer under the table and opened it. Hey, Tom, look what I got. Inside the drawer, a collection of deliciously tempting candy bars. Tom, look, I got some Milky Ways for you. You like nuts? I got a Baby Ruth here with your name on it. How about Mounds? I love Mounds. That coconut, just melts in your mouth. Tom Hanks was not amused, nor was he tempted. The thought of that drawer and its contents, it turned his stomach. Kit Kat? Clark Bar? Philadelphia was a movie that attracted talent. There were many bright lights and familiar faces in the cast. Besides Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington, these included Mary Steenburgen, Joanne Woodward, Antonio Banderas, and the legendary Jason Robards. Excuse me, Mr. Robards. I'm Ron Nyswaner. I wrote the film. I just wanted to thank you for being in this movie. I'm so honored you're here. Ron, I'd be here if I had one line of dialogue. One of the bright lights on set that day was a less familiar face. Ron Vauder played a major supporting role. He was one of the attorneys testifying against Tom Hanks' character in court. In his previous lives, he had been a Green Beret and a Jesuit priest. Now, he was an actor's actor. And for a long time, he had been battling AIDS. As shooting approached, Ron Vauder became sicker. He collapsed and was taken to the hospital. He was very ill, and Jonathan Demme was worried. He was scared. Would Ron be up to the task? Was this shoot even safe for him? Would we have to replace him? It just wasn't possible for a movie about discrimination against people with AIDS to fire an actor with AIDS. Jonathan Demme visited Ron Vauder in the hospital shortly before shooting. He looked terrible. He was listless. Demme was so anxious, he could feel his heart beating, he could feel the sweat on his brow. He sat by Ron's bedside. Ron, I know you're going to get better. I know you're going to get better. However, I think what I need to do is to cast a backup for you. In the highly unlikely event that the doctor doesn't permit you to come back to work, we've got to have somebody standing by. Ron Vauder opened his sick eyes and reached out a hand to touch Demi's knee. Jonathan, I understand, really, I understand. Two days before shooting, two of the movie's producers traveled to the hospital to check in on Ron. Ron? Guys, come on in. The team from Philadelphia was slack-jawed. There, sitting in a chair, sipping on a glass of wine, smoking a cigarette, reading the newspaper, was a very sprightly Ron Vauder. He wanted so much to do this movie. Hell or high water would be no obstacle, nor would the ravages of AIDS. Ron struggled bravely through the shoot. He had a persistent fever. He was damp, wet, sweating. He was radiating heat, and yet he went on. Ron Vauder died on April 16, 1994, of complications from AIDS. He lived long enough to see Philadelphia change minds and change hearts everywhere. Christmas 1992, North Philadelphia. There, in the row house they called home, a family. Mom and Dad in their 30s, two children, ages 8 and 6. All of them living with AIDS. This Christmas, they knew, would be their last together. Their last ever. And so they sat together. Sick, helpless, hopeless. Barely any food in the house. Barely any heat in the furnace. There were no gifts. There was no tree. There was no holiday cheer. This Christmas was like any other day, a day to struggle against death one more time. From outside their house, they could hear something. We were always told that Christmas miracles were things in storybooks and fairy tales. We were always warned to be wary of strangers, to look away when someone you don't know looks you in the eye. How to explain it then? In they came, and they kept coming. Strangers. Pans and plates of food they carried. They dragged in a Christmas tree and set about decorating it. Box after box of gifts for the children. And so it was, on this Christmas day in 1992, that the cast and crew of Philadelphia brought love and joy to a family that had known none of it for a very long time. And so it was on this Christmas day in 1992. This would be their last Christmas together. And it would be the best Christmas ever.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
Be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.
It's part of the ritual of Hollywood. Big movies, important movies, they get screened in person for the first family. And so, Ron Nicewander and Jonathan Demme and their stars were there at the White House for a presidential screening of Philadelphia. It was about halfway through the movie when the coughing began. This was the era when gays in the military was a big controversy of the day, just before Don't Ask, Don't Tell became official policy. And there, on the big screen at the White House, was a costume party. The characters played by Tom Hanks and Antonio Banderas were in Navy dress whites, dancing arm in arm and cheek to cheek, man to man. Jonathan Demme glanced at Ron Nicewander. Ron glanced back. In front of them, a man was shifting uncomfortably in his chair. He was squirming. In front of them, William Jefferson Clinton, the 42nd president of the United States, was stepping out to go to the bathroom. By the end of the film, we are faced with the death of Tom Hanks' character, Andy Beckett. Family and friends say their goodbyes. Andy's mom, Joanne Woodward, leans in to kiss him on the forehead. "Good night, Angel, my sweet boy." These were the same words of Ron Nicewander's sister-in-law as his nephew lay dying. Denzel Washington's Joe Miller sits beside Andy on his bed. He congratulates Andy on winning the case. But the man most changed by this case was Joe Miller. Joe straightens the oxygen mask on Andy's face. It is the first time he has touched the man with AIDS since they met, and he does it with tender care and with love. "I'm ready," says Andy as he begins to slip away. They were the same words Jonathan Demme's friend Juan Botas whispered as he surrendered to AIDS. It's the final scene of Philadelphia. Andrew Beckett, Tom Hanks, has died. His friends and family are celebrating his life. The camera tracks in on a TV screen playing a VHS of Andy as a young boy. Mark Platt, one of the TriStar executives responsible for the film, remembers seeing that scene for the very first time. The leaves in the air, the wind blowing, a playful young boy, innocent, full of hope and promise. He wept. It was the most decent thing he'd ever seen. You never know how a movie will perform at the box office, but much harder than making a hit is making a difference. That's the thing about art. It can change the way people feel and think. Mark Platt is a producer of many Hollywood successes, yet to this day, Philadelphia is the one that makes him most proud. March 21, 1994. Schindler's List was poised to sweep the 66th Annual Academy Awards. Liam Neeson was a shoo-in for Best Actor. And the Oscar for Best Actor goes to Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. Here's what I know. I know that my work in this film is magnified by the fact that the streets of heaven are too crowded with angels. We know their names. They number 1,000 for each one of the red ribbons that we wear here tonight. They finally rest in the warm embrace of the gracious creator of us all, a healing embrace that cools their fevers, that clears their skin, and allows their eyes to see the simple, self-evident, common sense truth that is made manifest by our benevolent creator and was written on paper by wise and tolerant men in the city of Philadelphia 200 years ago. God bless you all. God have mercy on us all. And God bless America. Jonathan Demme died on the morning of April 26, 2017. He was 73. He had been suffering from cancer and heart disease. Ron Niswanger spoke at his service. Jonathan Demme was one of the most important people in my life. And he was one of the most positive men I ever met. Positive about life, positive about people, and positive that a little movie could change the way we think about a terrible disease and change the way we treat each other. Jonathan was convinced that no disease is more powerful than the simple act of love. That's the lasting gift of Philadelphia. That's the lasting gift of Jonathan Demme. Before Philadelphia, most people didn't know anybody who had died of AIDS. And now, they did. He is their brother and father, their sister and mother, their son and daughter, their best friend, their lover, their spouse. He is us and them. He is you and me. He is the light in the eyes of the ones you love. He is the warm embrace in their arms. There are movies that entertain and inform us. There are movies that change culture. And then, once in a great while, there are movies that change us. After Philadelphia, a couple in Pasadena are holding hands on the couch. They are watching the movie on TV. A year earlier, they had lost their only son to AIDS. And they were crying. To see a family love their son that way, to understand the power of that loss and the dignity to which all people are entitled, to know that their son had not died in vain as long as his memory lived in all those who love him. After Philadelphia, a 20-year-old African-American woman in Washington, D.C. is watching the movie on TV with her extended family, parents, uncles and aunts, cousins and friends. She's anxious. Her heart is beating out of her chest. Her family is very religious, and what she has to tell them, she doesn't know how to find the words. The movie ends. She stands up. She points to the screen. That's me. I'm that. I'm HIV positive. Her shocked family did not reject her. They gathered round and embraced her. After Philadelphia, an Oregon woman leaves the theater. Tears are streaming down her face. Her cousin had contracted AIDS, and she didn't know what to do. She didn't know how to cope. So she had simply cut him out of her life. But tonight, she would call him. She would ask him how he's doing. She would tell him how sorry she is. She would visit him the next day, and the next day after that. After Philadelphia, Sue Kaler, the last surviving extra from the movie Living with HIV, went back to her job at the bank. She was at her desk. The desk next to hers sat empty still. On the other side of the branch, a banker stood up and lifted a cardboard box to his desk. The staff watched as he loaded that box with pens and paper and photos and personal items. They watched as the man moved that box to the desk beside Sue Kaler, the one he had left months before. Everyone watched. Sue Kaler watched. He looked at her and smiled. She stood and he gave her a hug. Everyone hugged Sue Kaler that day. The lucky ones twice. As the bank manager looked on, he remembered something his mother once told him. It went something like this. May we never find space so vast, places so cold, hearts and minds so empty that we cannot fill them with love and warmth. ...2013... Zambia, Africa. Connie Mudenda's life had been saved by free medication for HIV. Every day she would take her pills, now and for the rest of her life. There was reason for joy. Connie had a new baby, 6 weeks old. Her name is Lubona. There was also reason for worry. One of the most insidious means of transmission for HIV is mother to child. After losing 3 children to AIDS, Connie was terrified. Was her new baby sick or healthy? She took her baby for testing. They pricked her on the foot. You'll have the results in 2 weeks. And so, she waited. After 2 weeks, the results are not ready. Come back in another 2 weeks. Again, she waited, anxiously. Now it would be a month. Every second of every day wondering if her baby was positive or negative for HIV. Imagine what that worry feels like. It scared the hell out of her. After 1 month, she's back at the clinic. Give me my daughter's test results. They're not ready yet. Let us test her again. No, not again. You're not going to prick her foot again. Give me the results now. They don't want to tell me, she thought. They don't want to give me the bad news that my daughter is HIV positive. Give me the results now. But they couldn't find them. They were lost somewhere in the lab. I'm not leaving this place until I get those results. She barged into the lab and went to work, searching every file, every drawer, every cabinet, until finally, an envelope with her name on it. And inside, a note she was afraid to read. She took the envelope and ran. She was weeping. She ran to the medical clinic where she worked. Breathless, crying, she entered the startled medical director's office and held out the note in her hand. The medical director began to cry too. It's okay, Connie. You know there is medication. Your child is going to be okay. Connie's hand was shaking. The medical director took the note from her and slowly peeled it open. Connie held her breath and closed her eyes. The results are negative. Your daughter is healthy. From Wondery, this has been a 2-part deep dive inspired by the story behind the classic movie Philadelphia, now celebrating its 25th anniversary. This has been part 2 of People Like Us Inside Philadelphia. Written and narrated by Mark Ramsey, audio design and production by Jeff Schmidt, produced by Mark Ramsey Media, executive producers Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
On My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.